is the director of the Fania Gottesfeld Heller Doctoral Program at the Azrieli Graduate School of Jewish Education and Administration at Yeshiva University, an associate clinical professor of child psychology at Albert Einstein College of Medicine, and co-educational director of Hidden Sparks. Dr. Novick received her PhD from Rutgers University and interned at Beth Israel Medical Center in New York. She developed the Alliance for School Mental Health at North Shore Long Island Jewish Medical Center and served as its director, authoring the Brave Bully Prevention Program. She is recognized for her expertise in child behavior therapy and has published scholarly articles on school applications of behavior management, children and trauma, and bully prevention. She is a licensed clinical psychologist with specialization in child anxiety disorders, cognitive behavior therapy, and family therapy. She is the author of a book for parents, Helping Your Child Make Friends, and editor of the book series, Kids Don't Come with Instruction Manuals. I'm also very happy to introduce our technical facilitator, Betsy Kane, who will be working with Rona tonight. Welcome, Rona and Betsy.
Thank you so much, Judith. Welcome, everybody. In New York, it's a rainy night. It seems that every night that I'm talking about is this typical, we have atypical weather. So I'm glad I'm done with the Is This Typical series, because I'm pretty well done with winter. But what I hope we'll do together tonight, and please participate both on the phone and feel free to type questions or thoughts in the chat room. But what I hope we'll do tonight is to look at typical adolescent development, which some people would say is an oxymoron because adolescents are extremely fluid and changeable. So I want to address how much variation is typical and what might be some indicators of significant challenges or cause for concern. We're also going to talk about something that we think about much more with young children, and that's temperament and the role that that plays in adolescent development. And we'll also discuss issues in teenage development along the continuum, considering which tasks or struggles are usually mastered or handled at particular ages and phases, and what challenging behaviors emerge at this rather unique and somewhat stormy time of development. And the next slide, please. So our goals are that we understand as best as possible the developmental progression, but really, if I skip to the last bullet on this slide, understanding it also means recognizing that it's extraordinarily complex and that the notion of typical, particularly during the rapid changes that occur in adolescence, is extremely complex and challenging. And we'll also become familiar with temperament and its impact in the classroom as it relates to development. Our next slide. What I'd like all of us to do, and for some of us, this is just a terrible thought, to think back to ourselves in middle school or high school. Some of us would not like to go back there, but think about yourself at that time in your life. Was there an area of learning or behavior or development where someone was asking about you, or perhaps you were wondering about yourself? Is this typical? Or was there an area of learning or behavior where you experienced or exhibited in those middle or high school years a dramatic change? Anybody want to share with us a thought they have about that time and something atypical or perhaps wondering if it was typical? I can certainly share. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, seeking a lot of alone time. Amounts of alone time.
Mm-hmm. And was that a new thing for you?
Yeah.
In other words, before middle or high school, more social, and now wanting more alone time.
Right.
Okay. And for me, actually, quite the opposite. It was going from having one or two good friends to having a posse of millions. And I remember distinctly both parents and school asking, you know, she's surrounded by dozens. You know, where is she in that mass of people? Anyone else?
Well, I remember, Mr. Shiffy, I remember my friends What my friends would say about me was that I didn't fight around with my mother, and I was very close to my mother during this period of time, and they weren't.
Mm-hmm. So you're also mentioning something that's so common, that at this age, peers do a lot, the peer group does a lot of comparing. So the question of is this typical becomes something that not only are teachers asking, not only are individuals asking, but children and our teens are looking at other teens and beginning to say things to them like, are you normal? They may be much more judgmental than well-trained adults. As we talk tonight, you know, keep thinking about yourself at this time in your life and what it was like, and, you know, project forward to how did it resolve, and is it still an area of concern, or were some of those things that people were so worried about or that felt so atypical really something that was unique to your adolescent time? If we could go to the next slide, please. And I want to share with you two students for us to think about as we talk about these issues today. These are real students, but they've been disguised. So I'll tell you first a little bit about Daniel, whose parents say that he's a really funny guy who loves telling jokes, but lately he's sleeping a lot, and they can't get him to school on time. Sometimes they can't get him to school at all. He has a group of great friends. He's very athletic. They love to play sports with him. But recently, he's turning down almost all invitations. He's spending hours in his room with the door closed. And the school has called, telling his parents, one of whom happens to be a senior educator, that he's failing 3 subjects. What do you think? Is this typical? And what would you need to know in order to help you answer that question? Let me ask for a show of hands, how many people would think that this is a pretty typical description and wouldn't be concerned about Daniel? Use your hand-raising button right above your chat room to vote for, yes, this is typical, I wouldn't be concerned. Interesting. No one says Daniel's typical. So what are some of people's concerns, and what more would you want to know? Anybody want to know how old Daniel is?
Yes.
Okay. Anything else?
The failing the subjects, is he engaging in the subjects at all, or has he, you know, just as he sort of checked out from his friends and from sports, has he also checked out from school?
That's great. I guess I would also, along the same lines, I'd wonder, is this the first time he's failed 3 subjects, or do they always, everything else talks about a change, but in this instance, is this something that has been a chronic, you know, long-standing problem for Daniel? Can we go to the next slide? Anyone have any other thoughts or questions about Daniel before we meet his female, I don't want to say counterpart, but a female adolescent? Feel free to type them in the chat room if you like. And let's think about Javi for a moment. Javi is vivacious. She quickly engages adults in conversation and peppers them with questions. She recently asked the school janitor where he goes on vacation and for the phone number of the hotel where he stays, since he said it was a very nice place. She talks without much invitation about her life, sharing detailed information equally with students and with teachers. In some classes, when she's called on, she seems to be kind of surprised by the attention and being called on, and she needs the question repeated. In other classes, she'll call out her responses and comments frequently, including, by the way, often noting when the teacher has made an error on the blackboard or misspelled something and calling out to correct the teacher. Yesterday, when a teacher assigned homework, Javi called out, "Great. I wish you would give us more problems to do. Can we have more homework?" Let me see a show of hands. Anybody think Javi presents as a typical adolescent? Again, use your hand raising to vote. And what questions would you have, and what more would you want to know about Javi to determine whether this is typical or something that would require some further attention? So again, we have no hands raised, So no one is thinking, oh, this is just a typical, ordinary teenage girl. Any particular questions people would have about Javi that they would want to know? We'll come back to her later tonight, but any questions?
How old is she?
How old is she? Absolutely. Okay. Any other questions about Javi? Okay, let's move on to the next slide.
Oh, I think there's a question in the chat room. About
Basil,
Is her behavior new?
Is the behavior new? It's a really good question. No, it's not new, but because you asked about age, this is the beginning of middle school for Javi. And whereas in elementary school, even with some departmentalized teaching, there was a much kind of tighter rein on the student and, teachers who could form very good working relationships with her. Now in a middle school, totally departmentalized, 9 to 11 teachers a day, it is greatly escalated from where it was. And another question, how long has this been going on for, and does she do this with all teachers and adults similarly? It is a problem across the board, but because there are now 9 to 11 teachers a day, we're beginning to see patterns of places where it's better and places where it's worse. Keep both Javi and Daniel in the back of your mind as we talk about both the process of development and temperament, and we'll circle back to them before we finish tonight. But first I want to think about the process of development and how it progresses. If you look at, I've drawn for you 3 possible pictures, A, B, and C, and I'd like for us to vote on which one we think best represents the process of development. Do we think it looks, in most children, like the graph that is represented in A, where what's on the graph is our ability or our development? Does it progress as A shows it, B, or C? If you think it's A, raise your hand. If you think it's B, click on the green check right next to the hand raising. And if you think it's C, then click on the red X. So everyone should have something indicated next to their name in a moment. Good, I see people are voting. So A is raise your hand, the raise your hand icon. B is the green check. And if you're voting for C, then it is the red X, all of them indicated right above your chat room. So I see some people are voting, and we have some votes for, we have some non-voters, some abstentions, and some people voting for B, and some people for C. Very good that nobody expects, and I think any educator who's spent any time with children knows, that A is absurdly unrealistic. No child progresses in exactly an even rate. There is a more staccato up platform, up pattern that you see in graph number B, where a child may progress and then level off for a while and then progress. But actually, the best picture for development is C. So those of you who had the red X, congratulations. The reason is that many children will regress before they progress. I actually got a call yesterday from a parent asking exactly the topic of our discussion tonight, is this typical? And she called and said, I don't know what to do. My teenage son is just making me crazy. He's become so irritable and so belligerent. I can't manage him, and I don't know what is going on with him. School also called and said, he's just not himself this week. And I was about, it's a family I know clinically, and I was about to ask more questions, and I said, well, you know, what's going on? And the mother said, well, I don't understand why he would have these changes. Nothing is new, except that just this week he had to do one of his math classes that he's really been struggling with, And just this week, you know, this, isn't it funny? The same week that he's so irritable, he really, like, finally got the math. And so she was describing this exact phenomena of backslipping as he's moving forward with development. She also went on to say, oh, and by the way, I think he's got, like, a low-grade stomach bug. And his father's out of town this week. I'm trying to remember. There was a fourth thing. And he's not sleeping. So the other thing about development is that we have periods of regression and backsliding, sometimes due to things that are not part of typical development, but they're kind of bumps in the road. And adolescents have a lot of them, like getting sick or having a period of poor sleep. If we could go to the next slide, please. So the reality in development is that it's an irregular progression, and it's also different for everyone. As much as you hear the phrase developmental milestones, and even with adolescents, particularly in terms of their development of secondary sex characteristics, their physical growth, we do have certain kind of developmental milestones where we say, well, you expect facial hair to come at this age, and we know that those are only guideposts, and that both physical development as well as cognitive and social development has a broad range of ages during which different children will reach that milestone. The next slide, please. Now, if we're going to talk about development, we also have to talk about kind of what does development lead to? What does a healthy, well-developed child or teenager do that's different from a child who perhaps isn't developing typically or should be a child that we have some concerns about or that we'd like to support their development because it's lagging in some ways. So a healthy, well-developed child or teen is self-confident and has skills in the area of both seeing themselves and understanding others, so kind of relationship and self-skills. Also, the other area is the ability to affect or emotions. So can a child constructively channel their frustration and anger? Can they manage their impulses? Can they wait? Can they delay gratification? And the final area that we look for in development is intrinsic motivation in order to achieve mastery as well as to cope with adversity. So if we want to put those into small kind of groupings or categories, if you could do the next, right? Thanks, Betsy. That we could make them into really three large categories of saying what we're looking for in our teens is the development of confidence and relatedness, of self-regulation, and of motivation, mastery, and resilience. The next slide, please. Now, of course, how do we determine whether something's normal or typical or not? We have to look not only at these kind of developmental outcomes that we're looking for, but we also have to look at what are the tasks that we're requiring children and teens to do. What are the transitions that they're experiencing? Some of the normative, like moving into middle school or from middle to high school or from high school to the year in Israel or to college. And what are any broader ecological risks? In other words, in the child's environment or culture, what are some of the other issues that are going on? And we're going to be best able to understand whether something is typical when we look at all of those factors in multiple ways and across multiple areas of development. If we could have the next slide. And so if we put these pieces together, looking at our goals, self-confidence, self-regulation, and mastery, in the context of the tasks, the transitions, and the risks, which, by the way, serve both as the means to prompt children to grow, you know, asking them to do certain tasks or asking them to transition makes them grow, but it also challenges them. If we put those pieces together, next slide, we get this a little bit overwhelming chart of what the secondary years looks like for our students. But across the top, we see our goals. We want them confident and related, self-regulated, motivated masters who have resilience. And on the left side, we have the tasks, transitions, and risks. Now, I've plugged in some things that I think fit in those boxes. So, for example, I think that one of the challenges to students becoming confident and related in middle and high school is the developmental task of managing team sports, sometimes highly competitive team sports. And it's hard to be confident about team sports. In my instance, when you're 5 feet tall, really hard to be confident about basketball. So that's a challenge, but for some students, it's also a vehicle that can help them develop this confidence and relatedness. Rather than go over all of the things in the chart, I give you plenty of, you know, in your leisure, review it. I'm curious if anyone would like to suggest any tasks, transitions, or risks that are common to middle school or high school students that you think particularly interact with these ideas of their building self-confidence or their relationships, their self-regulation, their motivation or mastery. Anyone want to suggest something in particular? Feel free to use the chat room as well. And one of the ones I just want to point your attention to are the risks. And the risk that is not unique to adolescents, the internal issues that are listed there, temperament, that's true regardless of your age. But the risk that is unique to adolescents are the rather massive hormonal and biological changes that do cause great challenges for self-regulation. I remember reading years ago, and it was only years after I'd been talking with parents who were so frustrated about adolescents, you know, sleep reversal pattern of wanting to be up late. And by the way, raise your hand, anybody in our group, if you have adolescents at home. Anyone who is a parent of an adolescent, raise your hand. My hand, I certainly have at least one at home, sometimes more. But if you are a parent of adolescent, you know all too well that their ideas about sleep and their need for sleep is very different. So it was only recently that I read the biological reality of that, and that's that anyone who has an adolescent at home has also usually been pregnant at some point in their life. When you're pregnant, you have large amounts of human growth hormone swimming in your body, and it makes you very tired. The same is true of adolescents. They also have large amounts of human growth hormone swimming in their bloodstream because they're going through their growth spurt, and it actually is sedating and makes them quite tired. Can we have the next slide, please? Behavior develops on a continuum. We already talked about the fact that there's no actual milestones, or, you know, it's not like we say, okay, at 13 you're bar mitzvah, and therefore, you know, these are the things you're capable of doing. We do say these are the things you're expected to do, but not necessarily that you're capable. The next slide. So if we think about aggression on a continuum, we can say that it's not that aggression is only a problem for young children or only a problem for older children, that it's not that it's atypical at any one point in time, but types of it are very unusual or atypical. So if you go way down to the infant and toddler age, fighting doesn't raise, it's not pleasant, but it doesn't raise a lot of alarms. Has anybody ever had to deal with an adolescent who's biting? I mean, I've been working for a lot of years. I don't think I've ever seen biting in adolescents. And yet, has anyone had to deal with aggression in adolescents? And who can give us some examples of what type of aggressive behavior you usually see in your classroom with adolescents? Can anybody share an example of an aggressive behavior that they saw with a middle or high school student?
Being verbally argumentative with the teacher.
verbal argumentativeness, absolutely, extraordinarily common, and obviously adolescents have more developed verbal skills, so they're going to be more capable of verbal banter than younger children. I've added under 6th to 8th grade that you start getting sarcasm. You don't see that much younger because children don't have the cognitive ability to know or to understand sarcastic humor and other forms of verbal aggression. So the fact that aggression changes over time makes it hard to say this aggressive child is typical or atypical at a particular point in time. We have to look not only at the behavior itself, but kind of the content or the flavor of it for that particular age. We could have the next slide, please. Now, we can take any behavior and look at it on a continuum. So if we were to think about distractibility, and let's focus on middle school and high school students, I just saw that's a great other example of aggression, thank you, ignoring the teacher in a passive-aggressive way. And adolescents are masterful at being aggressive in ways that are, I wouldn't call them under the radar, but at ways that are kind of within the bounds of the rules so that they won't challenge authority necessarily or be aggressive in a way that's going to cause them consequences. They're wise enough to do it in a passive way, but still can be, exactly as we see in the chat room, a great example of aggression. So now we shift to distractibility. And think about your middle and high school classroom. What are some typical ways that you might see distractibility in a middle school or a high school student? And before I, as you're thinking about that, think about the second grade classroom, boys' classroom, Limude Kodesh, Jewish studies that I visited last year, where what I witnessed in the second grade classroom was while the rabbi was doing tefillah, while he was doing prayers, in the back of the room there were two boys playing frisbee. There was one boy with a slinky. There was another one bouncing a pinky ball. There were several boys roaming. That was a second grade classroom. What's more likely for you to see in terms of distractibility in middle and high school? I'm giving you moments to type or to talk. Doodling, excellent. Daydreaming. And by the way, some of the doodling in middle school and high school can become extraordinarily advanced because you also have students whose artistic skill has become very well developed, and so they can become extremely engaged in their doodling. Sleeping, very appropriate and very tied to the issue for adolescents of sleepiness, of their sleep deprivation and lack of sleep. I saw a study recently that suggested that the best time for adolescents to have school would be to have their school day begin at 4 in the afternoon and go until midnight. None of us, of course, are volunteering for that job, so we're forcing them into our sleep-wake pattern, which doesn't necessarily work for them biologically. And the other suggestion of chatting also is something that you see in distractibility because this is an age when social context and contact is so important. The next slide, please. Now, I want to talk about one of the circles here in particular. I want to talk about disposition and temperament. But I just want to note that in terms of development, there are also external support systems that can be very helpful in helping a child's development progress, their family, us, the educators who care about them, their peer group. All of those external support systems can help, and they help only if they are predicated on affective ties. In other words, people who genuinely care about the student and who the student cares about. But I want to focus on disposition and temperament, which, by the way, can be a protective factor for students, but also their own temperament can sometimes cause them great degrees of challenge and cause us as educators some challenge. Can we have the next slide, please? The dispositional factors identified decades ago by Chesson and Birch, among others, recognize that just as babies are born with their own combination of physical characteristics, they also have patterns of behavior that seem to be kind of pre-wired, like their factory settings. And anybody who is as old as I am and has gotten a VCR that comes, you know, blinking 12, and you've tried to reset the factory settings, you know how challenging that can sometimes be. So these temperamental factors in combination help make us the unique people that we are. Can I see show of hands how many people in our group today, how many people as parents have more than one child? Use your hand icon to raise your hand if you're the parent of more than one child. Seeing our votes. Oh, okay, so we have several people who have more than one. And those of you who have more than one child, if you can think about your early days with your children, how long did it take you till you noticed that they were different? That the second baby, or third, or fourth, or fifth, that you brought home was different than the first? For some of you, my guess is it might have been a matter of hours before you noticed, but certainly within a matter of weeks, if not a matter of months, you would notice that some children have very high activity levels. They just move around all the time. Some children are highly regular. They have a routine, and they're kind of easy about that routine, and they can shift from their schedules, but they eat, sleep on a regular schedule. Some children have an initial reaction that is wonder, awe, and acceptance, and other children have an initial reaction more on the side of the continuum of terror and don't like things that are new. Distractibility is also a temperamental factor, with some children being highly focused and other children who are easily pulled into other directions. We also have the concept of adaptability. How quickly and smoothly can a child adjust to something new? Intensity refers to my infant example is whether an infant, when they're upset, cries or whether they wail with high intensity. My adolescent example is, you know, the adolescent who's angry and kind of sullenly steps out of the room versus the adolescent who, when they're angry, stomps up the stairs, slams the door, and blasts the music. Mood refers to whether a person is basically in a happy, good, carefree mood most of the time, or a more pessimistic and anxious mood most of the time. Persistence is your stick-to-itiveness. And sensitivity usually refers very much to our very basic sensitivity about whether things like the feeling of fabrics and hot and cold or loud noises bother us, but also has to do with how sensitive are you to hurt, not just physical pain, but to emotional pain. Can we have the next slide, please? And as we think about these two visions of temperament, I'd like you to meet these two eighth graders when they were much younger. Let's imagine Yehuda, who was a really easy baby. He was very regular. He ate and slept on the clock, personable and friendly, great with strangers, loved new things, was really gutsy. He would always persist with difficult tasks. He was one of the first children to learn to ride a two-wheeler. He learned his writing and drawing very quickly because he really stuck with it. He's calm most of the time, and when he's upset, you can easily reassure him, and most of the time he seems happy. Compare him to Yossi, whose parents tell you he was colicky and he never slept. He's always been tentative with new people. He often rejects things or refuses to try them, or gives a half-hearted try and then gives up. He is moody and fussy, and almost anything can set him off. Once upset, they say he was impossible to calm down, with intense reactions to many things. If you're the eighth grade teacher of Yossi and Yehuda, What do you think you're seeing in your classroom? Have these temperaments gone away? How much of them are being carried into adolescence? And what do they look like now? And by the way, which one would you rather have in your class? Which one is a better fit for you? Any thoughts? While you're thinking about Yehuda and Yossi, let me share with you a story from Jerry Kagan's research on children like Yehuda and Yossi that he's followed all the way into adulthood. So someone voted on wanting Yehuda in their class, which I think is a very common response. Interestingly, when he followed children like this into adulthood, what he found was incredible persistence of some of these factors, but not all. But what he found was that the Yossis were actually much more compliant. That when you asked Yossis, even in their grade school years, to do things that were outside the norm or a little bit questionable, that they wouldn't question, they would just do them. Whereas the Yehudas were more likely to challenge adult authority and say, well, why do you want me to do that? So that while it's very common for us to think, gee, I'd really like Yehuda, some of the children who are giving us more difficulty in adolescence may be the more those students whose temperament allows them to be calm, to be more gutsy. One of the things we see commonly in adolescence is increased risk-taking. A child like Yossi is less likely to take risks. A child like Yehuda is the one who's going to be riding his skateboard down the school stairs, despite, you know, all rules and logical thought to the opposite. In fact, some research on the developing adolescent brain, particularly, by the way, the male adolescent brain, has found that when you look at the brains of normal adults and you ask them questions like, would you like to eat a bug? Let's take kosher aside for a moment. The part of our brain that lights up is the yuck part. Hello? Oops, somebody had music there for a moment. The part of the adolescent brain that lights up when you say, male adolescent brain, would you like to eat a bug, says, interesting. And when you ask a normal adult, would you ride your bicycle down three flights of steep stairs, the part of our brain that lights up is danger. Absolutely not. The part of the male adolescent brain that resonates with that question, would you ride your bicycle down three flights of steep stairs, is cool. So we know that some of this wiring does come from temperament and some of it comes from adolescence. The next slide, please. Temperament points to keep in mind as a teacher is that what's normal for each person relates to their own temperament. What's normal for Yossi is really not what's normal for Yehuda. But the extremes of temperament often seem outside the norm or atypical to others, especially if I'm a Yehuda, a Yossi seems really atypical to me. I don't understand why you wouldn't want to do that cool thing. Or I don't understand why you just do what the teacher says or why you argue with the teacher. Temperament is malleable or avoidable, but not without significant effort. We can't easily wake up in the morning and turn our temperament off. We can learn to go beyond it. We can learn to adjust for it and deal with it, but it's very hard to wake up in the morning and say, I'm not going to be a distractible person. Or, I'm going to be adaptable today. You have to work at it. When you think of students who've been challenging for you or present challenges to colleagues that you've been in contact with, which temperamental factors do you think have been most frequently an issue? Has it been things like regularity or distractibility or activity level? Think of those temperamental factors and add in our chat room which of the factors have been most of a problem. Can we go into the next slide while people are thinking about those factors? some developmental realities we have to think about for adolescents is that their development is occurring at the same time, very rapidly, in three spheres. The physical, the cognitive, I've already talked a little bit about their brain, and the psychosocial. The next slide. In terms of the physical realities, they have rapid height and weight gains, their secondary sex characteristics develop, and their brain development is continuing, although recent research suggests that even though we thought that adolescents' brains by late in adolescence, that is by high school, were exactly like adults, we now realize that is not the case. And then in particular, the frontal lobe of the brain, the part that is most responsible for what's called executive function, planning, managing our emotions, being self-motivated. In fact, all of those areas that we talked about as being critical for healthy development, kind of our goals or endpoints, really need the frontal lobe. And the frontal lobe is, as a colleague of mine says, not fully online, even in adolescence. It's not there until into adulthood. The result of some of these physical changes and implications is that adolescents sleep longer. They may be quite clumsy. Children who were graceful and perfectly competent in the psychomotor area before may develop clumsiness in adolescence because literally their bodies are growing overnight. In girls, there may be sensitivity about weight because girls put on body mass in adolescence. And adolescence is very unkind to girls in that they are much more likely to gain that body mass and fat, whereas boys are more likely to gain it in muscle. And in boys, you see enormous sensitivity about height. And the variability in heights between middle school and high school boys is enormous. So asking what is typical or what is normal in a sixth grade, a seventh grade, eighth grade, you can see boys who are still under 5 feet and boys who are, you know, literally busting over 6 feet. The next slide, please. In terms of cognitive development, we get advanced reasoning skills and abstract thinking and the capacity for metacognition all increase. As a
Hello?
Result, yes? Hello?
Okay, no, I lost you for a minute.
Okay, I'm glad you're there.
Yeah.
As a result of all of these burgeoning cognitive skills, the downside is that I'm now more able as an adolescent to be self-conscious. I really can abstract and reason and think about, gee, I'm different from everybody else. It really contributes to adolescent sense of uniqueness, self-consciousness, and their belief that no one else has ever experienced this. Try talking to adolescents about when I was your age and their eyes glass over because they cannot connect that you once had an experience that's similar to what they are having. Also very common in adolescents is something called their personal fable or the invulnerability myth, the notion that this can't happen to me, that serious illness can't happen to me, that I can drive fast, I won't get a speeding ticket, I'm not the person who gets caught, I don't need a helmet on my bicycle, other people have accidents. But the good parts of these advanced reasoning skills are that we see an enormous move towards causes and activism. Students at this age want to be advocates, and we can cultivate their justice orientation and their very strong motivation to make a difference in the world. The next slide. And in terms of psychosocial changes and implications, this is the time when young people are figuring out who they are. That means they're going to spend more time with their friends and their family because part of it, becoming your own person means separating from your family of origin, not just being somebody's son or daughter, not just being someone's student, but becoming your own person. Their push towards becoming more autonomous and independent leads to wanting more privacy. And I said we would circle back, but think about our young man who was locking himself in his room for long periods of time. The challenge always with adolescents about what is typical is that so much of what is atypical in adolescents that we're really worried about happens in all adolescents. All adolescents sometimes lock themselves in their room. So what makes it typical or atypical is often a matter of degree and the other things that are happening around it. Adolescents have a greater ability for intimacy. They develop their own sense of sexuality and a very strong achievement focus, as well as a focus on achievement within their friendships, wanting to find close friendships. Some of the implications include things like getting very involved in hobbies and clubs, being a little bit elusive with adults and talking about their friendships and wanting those friendships to be separate, to be theirs, to not be something that's managed by the adults in their world, whether they're educators or parents. And adolescents can also become quite argumentative and question adult authority. And again, here, typical and atypical is often a matter of degree. It is very common. Well, you know, adolescents who just accept everything everyone says would be quite unusual and atypical. On the other hand, an adolescent who is constantly arguing in your class not only is going to be difficult to manage, but also is going to interfere with their development in other areas. The next slide, please. So our challenge with adolescents is, how do we figure out what's typical? When they are fluid, they're constantly shifting. One minute they're sleeping all day long, the next minute they're up at 7 with lots of energy. So much of adolescence is about change, rapid and unpredictable shifts, that, you know, they wake up one morning and just think of the physical manifestation, their face looks totally different, it's all puffy and broken out, and the next day the skin is clear. They literally seem to grow before our eyes. And many red flag behaviors or issues are not atypical in adolescence. So anger, sadness, difficulty in relationships, volatility, all of these are things that happen even in the most typical developing adolescent. Next slide. So how do we think about what are the areas that we really should be worried about, and where are the places that we say, you know what, this may not be typical. I think I'm concerned about it. And I've thought about this in terms of the academic, the social, the affective, and the behavioral areas. But those are the four areas that you would want to think about. And if you have concern in one area, but all the other areas seem to be developing fine, then you may have less concern than if you see a student is having difficulty that is crossing these areas. And what are the difficulties even within them that I'm suggesting here? And as we're reviewing them, please write in or, you know, interrupt me, join me, with other ones that you've seen that you either have a question about whether it's typical or you think it belongs in this grid. So an academic, very basic skill deficits should raise concern at this point. Adolescents should have mastered basic skills. They should know how to read, write, do basic arithmetic in the Lumude Kodesh realm. They should know basic Kriya. They should be able to decode simple psukim. It shouldn't be that you are teaching the Aleph Bet to a seventh grader. So if you're seeing basic skill deficits, that is cause for concern. Also, any rapid change in performance. So a student who was doing absolutely fine in their in participating in Gemara or in high-level conversations and now seems to have lost those abilities, that's a great concern, especially if it's a rapid change. The other area that we look at is the learning curve. Is the student able to kind of keep pace with their peers in adding new skills and in moving forward? That's the academic piece. In the social piece, probably the most significant red flag or area for concern in adolescence is withdrawal, social withdrawal. A student pulling back, not engaging with friends, when you see them, not socializing. Now, I'm not talking about a shy child who's never been terribly connected, but about social withdrawal and pulling back. It is a red flag that it could cause, could be a, an indication of serious difficulties. Odd social behavior, and again, especially if it's not something that's been a persistent problem, like Javi that we met earlier tonight, where she has always been much better with adults than with children. She has always been struggling with boundary and social cognition issues of knowing what's the right time to say something, what's the right person to share which information with. And a sudden change in peer group also may warrant concern. Now, that one is challenging, however, because adolescents do go in and out of peer groups, more so in middle school than even in high school, where they're shifting their cliques and their teams and the people they like and they don't like. In the area of affect, severe and persistent depression. The rule of, hello, yes? Okay, I thought there was a question. The rule of thumb for the affective realm is for severe and persistent depression is that we want to know, is this a student who has been really sad most of the day for multiple days in a row over a period of weeks? Students have periods where they're down, especially in adolescence. There's been a breakup with a friend. I didn't do as well on my entrance exams for high school. That is going to lead to, affective shifts. But if it's unmovable and it's really lasting for a long time, then it should be of some concern. Rapidly shifting moods also can be of concern, as can be high levels of anxiety, especially when they come with avoidance. All teenagers have things they're scared of. They're scared of trying out for team sports. They're scared of asking somebody to join them for a weekend get-together. There are things that they're scared of, but if their fear becomes so pervasive, like one young man I was working with in high school, whose fear became so pervasive that he began having physical symptoms, throwing up, having the equivalent of what felt to him like a heart attack, and eventually avoiding going to school, then you know that this is an area that warrants concern. And in the behavioral area, of course, severe aggression beyond some of the things we talked about, like passive-aggressive behavior or verbal aggression, but severe and persistent aggression. Perseveration or rituals, having to do things in a very particular way. Now, some of this is, teenagers, like everybody else, are creatures of habit, and I don't mean them screaming at a younger brother or sister, if you use my laptop, I want you to leave it the way you found it. That's not what I mean about perseveration or ritual. But I mean, be concerned if things are happening where in large areas of a student's life, things have to be maintained in a particular way. And certainly of great concern is any self-destructive behavior beyond the normal risk-taking that we see in adolescents. So we might say, eating 20 yodels for breakfast is self-destructive behavior, but that's not what I mean here. I mean anything like cutting themselves or doing things that are absolutely dangerous, like playing games of chicken on railroad tracks or things like that. Those are things of concern. Before we have our last few minutes together, I certainly can give you more information on Javi and Daniel. But before I do that, I want to leave time for any comments or questions, and then we'll return to them. So any thoughts either about areas that you've come across that you're worrying, wondering, is this typical, or about our discussion in general? Feel free to type them in the chat room as I finish with a return to Javi and Daniel. So what I can tell you about Javi and Daniel, we can go to the last slide while we do that, is that very much like this slide says, no factor determines normality, and understanding the whole child is critical. In Daniel's case, there was reason to be concerned, and there was this a rather marked change that was escalating to the point where by the time he came to my attention, he had missed over half the days of school in the semester. What was important, however, while people contact me as a psychologist wanting for an evaluation, what was much more helpful was for the people who knew Daniel, his parents, his teachers, and even for me to be descriptive rather than evaluative and to talk about where he was struggling and where he needed assistance so that we could explore and intervene appropriately. In Daniel's case, the intervention required very close work with parents and with school to give him a lot more push to get him, you know, back into school. And his school was terrific in setting up criteria that he had to meet in order to continue. And he was very athletic, and they made a typical rule in public school that he couldn't play, but not always typical in yeshiva day schools, they made the rule that he couldn't play in a game if he wasn't in school for the day, and he couldn't play in major games if he had missed more than one day of school the week of that game. And he took that very seriously, and even when he was sick, would insist that parents drive him to school because he didn't want to, you know, miss his opportunity to play in his sports games. And Javi continued to struggle also with the issues that we saw raised in the beginning of our discussion, with her rather atypical social development and her great difficulties understanding what was adorable, by the way, in childhood, which was her relatedness to adults and her asking very provocative and probing questions to anybody she met, that now in adolescence, and this is very common, a behavior that's typical in childhood becomes problematic or atypical in adolescence. So now as a young teen girl, she cannot be approaching male staff in the school and asking them where they vacation and to get the phone numbers and be carrying in her wallet, you know, the phone numbers of male staff, nor is it great, does it have great social outcomes if when the teacher gives homework, she says, oh, can we have more? So she's not winning friends with those kind of strategies. And in her case also, rather than be evaluative, describing the areas where she could use assistance around building her social cognition and decreasing her impulsivity has been really helpful. Building her self-restraint has been very helpful to her. Any last thoughts or questions? If not, we'll stay on the line for a few minutes. I know Judith wants to talk about evaluations for a moment. But I want to thank all of you for your participation and for your non-distracted, non-adolescent, typical adolescent, highly focused behavior tonight. And I hope that together we've noted just how complex and how wonderfully unique adolescents are, and that we will meet them the next time we come across them in our work as the complex creatures that they are, always looking for opportunities to help them move forward in their development. Judith, do you want to remind people about the evaluation?
Yes. In your email account, you should be receiving, you've already received it or within the next few minutes, the evaluation and the survey that I talked about at the beginning of the webinar. Please complete it and return it to Hidden Sparks. It's extremely valuable to us. This session will be available on the website within the next 24 hours. So if you want to listen again or download the PowerPoint, you can do that. And I just want to draw people's attention to the upcoming Hidden Sparks Without Walls sessions on Wednesday, March 3rd. We will be hearing from Dr. Judah Weller about core classroom practices in Judaic and general studies that reflect an appreciation for all kinds of learners in the classroom. And a couple of weeks later, on the 17th, March 17th, we will hear from Kelly Pollack about helping students discover how they learn. I would like to thank Rona and Betsy for creating a wonderful session tonight. And if people would like to continue the conversation for a few more minutes, they can do that. But we will be stopping the recording now. So thank you very much, Rona, for such an informative session.